for individuals interested in the medical field. Welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast, where doctors from around the world discuss groundbreaking work in the medical industry. Because in an ever-changing world, healthcare is constant.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, dear listeners from around the world. I hope everyone is well. Welcome back to the Doc Talk Podcast. I'm happy to announce that the guest surgeon for the fifth episode of the Doc Talk is Dr. Adit Manyar. Dr. Adit Rajesh Manyar did his MBBS and MS in orthopedics at the Maharashtra University of Health Sciences. He also received his DNB in orthopedics from the Delhi National Board in India. He completed his fellowship in orthopedics, arthroscopy and arthroplasty, as well as joint replacement at extremely prestigious hospitals in Mumbai. He is a member of the Bombay Orthopedic Society, Indian Society of Hip and Knee Surgeons, Maharashtra Orthopedic Association, among other reputed societies. After having conducted extensive research and having received several medical accolades, Dr. Manyar is presently working as a senior registrar at Cooper Hospital. We're ecstatic to have you on the podcast, Doctor. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to enlighten us with information in the field of orthopedics.
Thank you very much, Tanishka, for those kind words. I'm really excited to be here, and I think let's get cracking.
Yes. Okay. So after having spoken to a few medical students, one of my friends said he posed a question about arthritis because it's the most common type of joint injury, not just in India, but all over the world. So what would you say is the best way to prevent it?
So arthritis in simple language is basically damage to a joint.
Yes.
The most common form, that is osteoarthritis, is, you know, when the joint is damaged due to age-related wear and tear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what is important to understand here is that this is a part of the normal aging process, and there's nothing that can definitely prevent osteoarthritis.
Okay.
However, there are some risk factors which make you more prone for arthritis. So what one can do is make sure they avoid these risk factors.
Okay.
So to begin with, let's say you should control your weight.
Mm-hmm.
You can keep your muscles healthy and strong. And so you can do that by regularly exercising and maintaining a healthy diet, especially with a good amount of protein. You can reduce the impact on your joints by, you know, doing simple activities like activity modifications, like making sure you wear good padded shoes while you're running. You run on an even surface. You may keep your posture upright, which will make sure that the spine is in a good position. Another thing that people often overlook is you also need to maintain your bone strength, and which is especially important in the older age group when the bones continue to become weaker and the problems of arthritis will only increase in such a situation.
God, thank you so much for that, doctor. So what would you say is the difference between rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis?
Yeah, so it both is destruction of the joint. The reason for the destruction is different between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Osteoarthritis, as I said, is age-related wear and tear. You can compare it to, say, the tires of a car. Okay. The more you use a car, the more worn they are going to be. Mm-hmm. That is what osteoarthritis is. Rheumatoid arthritis is another condition, which is basically an autoimmune condition, mm-hmm. where the body finds certain parts of our own body to be foreign and it reacts to it. And that is how the joint is damaged. The treatment for both would be very different, and the age group at which it would affect, the joints that it would affect, are very different. Mm-hmm. And what you can expect from both would be very different. However, majority of the patients are affected by osteoarthritis, and rheumatoid arthritis is a relatively less commoner condition, especially in India.
Got it. Thank you so much. So doctor, what is trigger finger, and is surgery the only way to treat it?
So let's first understand what happens in a trigger finger.
Mm-hmm.
So the fingers of our hands are moved by tendons. These tendons are surrounded by certain bands of tissues which will help in its function. So these tissues are called pulleys.
Mm-hmm.
Now what happens in a trigger finger is that one of this pulley becomes inflamed. It swells up and it constricts the tendon in such a way that it reduces the movement of the tendon, which in turn will hamper the function of our fingers and reduce the movement of the fingers.
Okay.
So this is what a trigger finger basically is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now coming to the second part of your question, is surgery the only way to treat a trigger finger? No. I think there are multiple options that can be offered, and that would range from starting off with some anti-inflammatory medication. Certain splints can be used for the fingers. We can also give local steroid injections. And if all of this does not work, there is a recent percutaneous technique where we try and break or release the band with the help of needles. However, I think if all of this does not help and the patient is still complaining, surgery is the last resort. And this surgery is relatively simple and has good results. So I think for those who do not improve with the other forms of treatment, they should definitely consider surgery because it will rid them of their problem.
Okay. That's very intriguing. I didn't know about the percutaneous method. So doctor, sorry.
Yeah. So as I said, it's something that has just come, and I think it's showing good results. And I think that's going to be one of the major ways to treat it in the near coming days.
Mm-hmm. So the anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction surgery. So for most people who don't know, ACL is like a ligament in the knee, and it's a very popular surgery, I'm assuming. So which method must a patient opt for, like using the donor graft or using your own tissue as graft?
So I think when it comes to the choice of graft, there is a lot of controversy regarding it.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, there's no one correct answer to this.
Okay.
I don't think there is one graft which is the best. Each patient has his own individual demands, and I think this choice of what graft to use should be made on a case-to-case basis. Let's say, for instance, there's someone who has multiple ligament injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, he might require more than one grafts, where, as you said, the ACL and there are other ligaments in the knee which are also damaged and need to be reconstructed. In such cases, there might not be enough donor tissue from the patient. And in those cases, an allograft will definitely become necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there might be a patient who is not comfortable receiving a graft from an unknown donor. And in those cases, an autograft or from his own body would be beneficial.
Okay.
So I think this decision should be left on an individual basis. And I think you should discuss this with your surgeon and understood the pros and cons of both and make this decision on a case-to-case basis.
Fair enough. That's very sensible. So doctor, the leading cause of knee replacement, so I've heard, is osteoarthritis. So what happens if you wait too long for surgery?
That's a very good question. As we spoke earlier, osteoarthritis is basically wear and tear of the joint.
Mm-hmm.
And this arthritis would usually begin with destruction of the cartilage. Mm-hmm. As this continues to progress, it starts to destroy the bone as well. This can then lead to, deformities. And you would have seen a lot of people in the elderly age group with bone knees, etc. This is what happens, and it can cause these deformities, and this further damages the bone.
Mm-hmm.
What it also does is that the bone is then starting to load in places that it normally does not receive the body weight. And then it can even lead to stress fractures of the bones.
Okay.
And all this is happening while you are in severe pain and you're unable to use that joint, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think leaving it for too long is not a good option. And in terms of the surgery point of view, these surgeries like a knee replacement, hip replacement are very successful surgeries.
Yeah.
And if you're delaying it too much, you're basically converting a simple surgery into a more complicated surgery and increasing your chances of complications.
Okay, so what would you say are the newest procedures or the more cutting edge procedures in knee replacement? Are there any new procedures that have come about?
Yes, definitely. I think knee replacement is one of the most successful surgeries in orthopedics as of now. And these results have continued to improve. And I think it's only going to become better and better. The newest kid on the block right now is robotic knee replacement, which is a sort of an upgrade to the time-tested computer navigation.
Mm-hmm.
Robotics has allowed the surgeons to improve their accuracy because it's a computer which is making certain decisions.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is going to benefit the patient in the longer term.
Okay.
Also, I think with our understanding of how the knee works and what are the demands of the patients, and I think the demands of patients are increasingly becoming more and more, continuous design modifications of these processes have made the results much better.
Okay. So doctor, what another medical student had a question about carpal tunnel and what causes it in particular?
Yeah. So carpal tunnel is, as the name suggests, a tunnel which is present in your hand. Mm-hmm. Carpal tunnel syndrome can be caused by various things, but what essentially happens is the space within the tunnel decreases. This would lead to increasing the pressure on the structures that are traveling through the tunnel.
Okay.
So, and the tunnel consists, has structures like nerves and certain tendons. Now, nerves in specific are very sensitive to this increase in pressure, and it can affect the function of the nerve. So what it does is you get, as you know, nerves can have both sensory and motor. So it affects both functions of the nerves, and you'll have symptoms because of that. And if left unchecked and this pressure keeps on increasing, it can even lead to a situation where you have complete numbness in your fingers, in certain fingers, as well as complete paralysis of certain hand muscles.
Okay.
Now, I think there's no specific cause to it. There are certain conditions where we have found patients to be more prone to developing carpal tunnel syndrome. And those are patients who have diabetes, hypothyroidism, hypertension, rheumatoid arthritis, and then even certain cases where patients have had trauma to the hand can cause a carpal tunnel syndrome.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, doctor. So, doctor, when I was going through your CV, I was very fascinated by a postgraduate thesis. Would you like to talk a little bit about it and what inspired you to explore the topic?
So I think very briefly, my thesis was on using an arthroscopic technique to repair rotator cuff tears.
Mm-hmm.
Rotator cuff is a group of muscles that are very crucial to the function of the shoulder. And what we did in my thesis was we performed an arthroscopic single row technique for repairing these tears, and which we found was very successful and gave really good results to our patients.
That's great. Thank you so much. So I know this is probably a big question, but when and why do orthopedic surgeons decide to amputate a limb? It's very controversial. But is there a particular moment when you'll know for a fact that, I mean, I'm assuming it's the last resort, but when exactly would you say a surgeon decides to amputate a limb?
Yeah, so as you said, amputation is a major decision in someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we as orthopedic surgeons are always trying to preserve the limb as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are certain conditions when we do need to perform an amputation. One of them would be when the patient's life is in danger because of, say, infection of the part that is remaining, and removing the limb is the only way to save the patient. Another consideration would be when the limb itself has been rendered useless and is of no significant functional use, mm-hmm. which is usually because of significant damage to the muscles, vessels, and nerves.
Okay.
Also, as orthopedic surgeons, we do see a lot of traumatic amputation. That is, you know, when they have a road traffic accident and they would come with us where the amputation has already been done at the time of the accident. And in these cases, we would only refashion the stump in such a way that, you know, they can, it is suitable for fitting of a prosthesis at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to mention that there have been rapid advances in the development of orthosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there is soon going to be a day when we will be able to develop an orthosis which will almost mimic the function of a normal human limb.
That's great. So the surgeon that I've interviewed so far about their most interesting case, and most of them have never been able to pinpoint their most interesting case, but do you have one in particular that really stood out to you?
There have been a lot of interesting cases, but I think the first one that comes to my mind is there was this 11-year-old girl who had fractured both her forearm bones.
Mm-hmm.
To an orthopedic surgeon, it was a relatively simple fracture, and I think one that we would see very commonly.
Mm-hmm.
These fractures tend to heal well without any residual problems usually.
Okay.
However, her grandparents took this girl to a local quack, and when she eventually presented to us, she had lost complete functioning of her forearm and hand. She had developed what we call compartment syndrome, which was basically due to tight bandaging given by the quack. And then she had developed an infection of the dead tissue.
Oh my God.
We eventually did manage to save her limb, but it was functionally useless and it did not look normal either. And I think what it shows us that very simple injuries can lead to really catastrophic repercussions for life. And I think if they are not treated correctly and in a timely manner, it's something that, you know, everyone needs to know and not ignore certain things.
Definitely. I agree with that. So my last question for you, doctor, is what words of wisdom do you have for listeners who aspire to pursue medicine and surgery?
So I think I'm really satisfied and content by being able to be a surgeon. Mm-hmm. However, it does come at a cost. I think becoming a doctor, becoming a surgeon, especially in our country, is not easy. And as you go ahead, it definitely becomes tougher and tougher. You need to sacrifice a lot. And I think so, my advice would be pursue medicine only and only if you are really, really passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do pursue medicine, I'm sure you're going to enjoy it.
Thank you so much for meeting with us today, doctor.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I think I hope I could solve some of your queries there.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.